Welcome to Day Zero Update for July 7th, 2024. I'm your host, Chris Elogi.
And I'm Brandon Perkins.
Yeah, two-man crew as Dan Reb is at, what is it, AnimeCon?
Yep.
Wherever that event is.
AX? Yeah.
Yeah.
Where Anime all of Expo, the, I think is what it's called, but yeah, he's there.
Yeah, where a bunch of anime-adjacent games got announced.
Oh, yeah.
From all the semi-minor publishers out there that localize that kind of stuff. We got a handful of those games here, not too many of them, but there is some interesting stuff in there that we'll get to, along with some other news. I'd say probably not a big week of news here, but you know, there's stuff happening. But yeah, we got that going, and yeah, before we get to that stuff, we'll talk about what we've been playing, and I'll kick it off here. Been playing some of the First Descendant.
Mm-hmm.
New free-to-play shooter.
Yeah, and I've been hearing kind of like varying views, opinions on that game. Like, yeah. Really, like, all over the place.
Yeah. It is very much a first-person shooter from, I think it's Nexcon, or Nexon, that is heavily influenced by Warframe and Destiny.
Yeah.
With the way that most everything works in that game.
Yeah,
and
I've heard people compare it to be like, what if Genshin Impact was an FPS? That's kind of what I've been hearing.
Yeah, I would probably say it pulls a lot from Warframe.
Yeah,
because the main gist here is that the Volgus, an alien species or whatever the hell they are, have taken over the Earth and killed most of humanity before humanity has kind of found these people, whatever the hell they are, called the Descendants, that can fight back. And that is sort of where you come in. You pick from a trio of people. There's a dude that I think does grenade attacks, a woman that does a lot of ice attacks. And then a big dude in tanking outfit that is a tank. You sort of pick one of those three.
Yeah.
Not really a huge variety of, you know, abilities there. But
yeah,
you go through your tutorial with another character named Bunny, who ends up being the other free descendant you unlock through your first few hours. And then from there, you kind of get to... you're trying to find this thing called the Iron Hearts. There's one of a handful of them, I guess, that are important to whatever the hell's going on here. The story is not exactly told in an engaging way, nor is it really all that interesting here. But yeah, like some of that story stuff has some Destiny vibes to it.
Yeah.
And the descendants start seeing this character called the Guide that the humans in the base do not, and they start thinking they're just all going nuts for some reason, until the Guide starts like gaining access to their like database or whatever, and they're just like, okay, the Guide, whatever, and then just move on to acknowledging that the Guide exists, I guess. Yeah, that's kind of where I am at. We're just doing stuff to help our chances of taking down the Volgus and doing various things. It's all kind of told in very long dialogue scenes that you can skip through, which I kind of just recommend reading and skipping as you go versus actually sitting and watching it all.
Yeah.
It's not interesting.
Yeah, I've been told like the campaign is like very mid in general. Like it's just not very good world building is what I've heard.
Yeah, to a degree. It doesn't help that because it's a Nexon game, meaning it's not, you know, made by a Japanese or Western studio. There's no real attempt at lip syncing any of the dialogue you get. I assume it's all done in native Korean, and they're just like, we'll just dub the audio and who cares about anything else.
Yeah.
So you see a lot of that and you're like, man, this This is just purely localized and not attempt to make it look any better. But the way the gameplay works is you kind of go out into these open-ish areas.
Mm-hmm.
You get a handful of missions to do, and other people join those missions around the, you know, within a certain amount of time that you start them. They can join your missions on your team. Kind of thing, and or if, you, or if they're just running around, they just start shooting at the enemies that are spawning because of your mission. They can join it that way as well. So they kind of make it pretty free form, and your ability to kind of get some help in some of these missions, which is pretty cool to do. And usually you have a handful of these missions, and then they're like, "Oh, we'll open up another area," and you can go over there to their the headquarter area. You can fast travel to get whatever story stuff you need to open up the next stuff. And you go and kill more creatures, do some base defense stuff, or blow up, you know, an AB locations in these areas, all that kind of stuff. And along the way, you're kind of getting experience and gold and all these materials and some new weapons. And you kind of want to check every so often for your loot to see if there's better guns you want to switch to. And they have, much like Destiny, like a dozen variants of or types of guns, from, you know, pistol, you know, handguns and hand cannons to beam rifles and sniper rifles and launchers for missiles and whatnot. And usually the way those work is they're not like a Diablo style randomized loot or anything. It's more Destiny style, where they have at certain levels, they have certain stats, unless they're like a rare variant, which then you can have bonuses to various types of stats or whatever that can make them better than others of their same rank and all that. So you kind of do want to pay attention to some of that stuff. At the point where I'm at, I've had my master rank at 3, which means I can do the feeding of guns into other guns. Which I fucked up my first time because it doesn't explain it very well. You're feeding a higher level weapon into a lower level weapon, which ended up with me feeding a purple submachine gun into a blue one, which meant I lost all the bonuses and all that, but it does increase the stats and all that. But you kind of want to keep the rare stuff just because it's got, you know, actual bonuses to it, whereas anything that's, you know, blue or below, it's just kind of very by the numbers kind of thing, very, very replaceable. So, and on each of those types of weapons, you have modules that you can equip, which are very Warframe like. If you don't remember when they're like cards you can equip to each of your weapons, they give stat bonuses themselves. You can do that here as you have like a level or a certain amount of points you can put into it. Worth of cards, and you can't duplicate things. So there's somebody in the base that can dismantle that stuff or upgrade it or whatever. It's a very tedious menu to go through because it doesn't necessarily highlight, you know, duplicates modules or such, because I don't think you need multiples of a type to equip it on different weapons. It's just it moves between them as needed, and you can also have, you know, lists for each of them, like 3 different variants if you want to equip different things. Where I'm at, I don't really have that much variety that I need that just yet. And then what else? There's research, which is how you can unlock other descendants, and you can have it track that stuff for you. And you need to do one of those just so you can do the gun feeding stuff.
Yeah.
So it requires a special material for that, which isn't that hard to get. You get it from scrapping any guns. So you'll be doing a lot of that. And so you can potentially earn a lot of these descendants for free without paying any money for them.
Yeah.
Obviously, you have the option to get around that if you want. But yeah, a lot of those drop from certain kinds of missions. There are, like in each of the areas, there's usually like 3 or 4 main missions that anybody can jump into. Then there's one that goes off into a separate area that you can match, you know, publicly or privately, depending on if you want people to join you or not. I've been doing it publicly, and that helps out a lot to have other people. It's usually four to party packs. Once I did that for the first area, then you opened up a mission where you gotta go take down a big bad guy, big boss character, which was a big ass monster that we took down without too much trouble. Maybe the one issue I really have is that some weapons don't have a ton of ammo available, and it's, you know, when you're killing enemies, they drop a lot of different colored like power-up things or material things that are filling up health or your mana or whatever the hell it's called. Different things than your HUD, and it, I still don't know which one's the ammo. Because when I was on one of those missions where you get sent off to another area, I ran out of ammo for all my guns because it was all the same type of weapons or same type of ammo. You can see, like, there's four different types of ammo. So I guess I used it all up with my weapons, and I had to either try to get away far enough that I could get my inventory to swap to different weapons, or try to figure out how to get some ammo to drop from something that was dropping. But that was a little frustrating, but you know, for the most part, it's been fun. Just kind of going around shooting enemies, all that stuff is still pretty fun, still works very well. That kind of stuff. There's a Twitch drops that I was trying to do that one of them just lets you put a slice of pizza on the chest of your character, which is weird. Some real dumb stuff. Which I appreciate. And on PlayStation, there's a PS Plus pack. Though on the first day or two, it wasn't showing up in my inventories, but I assume they've been fixing that kind of stuff since then. I've not played in a couple days here, but yeah, the First Descendant, it's a very fun game, but heavy on a lot of the inventory management, and there's still even more. There's modules for each of the weapons, but also ones for your character itself, and then there's a whole other set of things you can equip that improve other stats that are important, that have, you know, even have sort of armor types or whatever, like where you have the armor sets, where you have all the sets or two or more of the items from the same set, you start getting stat boosts, that kind of stuff. And so there's a lot of shit going on in this game, and it takes a while to kind of get a grasp of what all the grind is going to be about, which is figuring out what all you want to bust down and stuff you might want to save. There's an inventory, like vault kind of thing, like Destiny, that you can store stuff in, all that kind of stuff. So yeah, it's a pretty fun game. Definitely a good one to put on while you're watching something on Netflix or whatever, or listening to a podcast. Definitely not the sort of game that you want to focus all your attention on. And like immersing yourself in the world, because it's just kind of a generic sci-fi world of, you know, humans and these descendants fighting aliens. They take various forms and whatever. It's not anything special that way, but gameplay wise, it's a very fun game. So as the First sentence on PlayStation, Xbox, and PC, and you can have cross progression if you link your account to a Nexon account, so you can swap around as needed. And what else? I think that's about it for that game. But yeah, fun time. Another thing I've been playing is the Power Wash Simulator's new DLC called Alice's Adventures, which is based on, you know, the Alice in Wonderland book, original book that is luckily public domain, so they can do whatever they want with that. And yeah, it's a very cool new DLC that has a lot of great art to it, lots of great weird art. The first area you're in is basically like the where Alice lands when she comes over to Wonderland. And there's an even achievement for setting up a ladder to where the portal is at and trying to jump up, where you're trying to escape. That's a free achievement or trophy if you want that. And yeah, that's like a nice little hallway that kind of gets very weird with different doors kind of melting or being at weird angles and all that kind of stuff, where it very much has the vibe of like, oh man, I really want a Willy Wonka DLC now, because I want to see a lot of weird shit. And yeah, it's full of great art, full of great weird art. A lot of stuff just not looking the way you would expect it.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, like the first job is in that hallway. You go to the room that Alice is in, where she's just weirded out by everything and just starts taking a bunch of random things and shrinks and grows
tall and
just mistakenly just taking every liquid thing she can find. As a stupid idiot.
Yeah, that's pretty much Alice in Wonderland to a T. It's just Alice does stupid shit and the plot unfolds.
She somehow ends up in a weird place, has no idea how to deal with it.
Yeah.
Just constantly annoys and offends other people as she's trying to find a way to get home.
Which is kind of was the point of why Lewis Carroll wrote the book in the first place. He wanted to write a book that didn't have some like kind of stodgy moral or anything to it. He was just like, I want to write a book where weird stuff. Excuse me. I want to write a book where weird shit just happens.
Yeah.
And he succeeded.
Yeah, we're like, you can probably assume every character in there is on drugs.
Yeah. And the weird thing is, all these years later, you still have people trying to come up with like, is there some underlying like, you know, theme, or is he trying to like get across some kind of allegory or something? It's like, no, he isn't.
Yeah.
He's just trying to make up a bunch of weird shit and see if it works.
Yep. And so that's the first stage. The second stage is in the White Rabbit's house, which I believe in the movie she takes or eats something that makes her grow giant to the size of the house. Sort of fills up the entire inside, and sort of in the process makes a huge mess, and you're cleaning all that up.
Mm-hmm.
He's got like tons of clocks and all that because he's, you know, that kind of OCD character. Mm. The third one is the caterpillar's tree where he's about to turn into a butterfly.
Yeah.
He's kind of talking to you while he's going through the transformation, which I was kind of expecting, spoilers, that he might pop out of the cocoon to transform into the butterfly form, but doesn't do that.
Nope.
But that's a fun stage. You got a big tree to climb up on and clean up, or not a tree. It's a mushroom. Sorry. But it's tree like in that sort of way, but that's a fun whole thing. And, then you go to the Mad Hatter's place, dealing with their weird table with all the sweets and such on it.
Yep.
And I believe the last one is in the Queen of Hearts court.
Mm-hmm.
Maze court thing.
Yep.
Lots of good places. This one's all focused on location, since there's not really any vehicles in Alice in Wonderland. But maybe you think I should read the book at some point, since it's—
You really should. It's actually, there's a lot of great additions out there. If you really want to go for it, I would get like an annotated version, because there's a lot of like little facts and notes about how the book was written and like some of the, you know, some of Lewis Carroll's own opinions on some of it that, you know, the book itself is great, but when you have some of the information behind it, it gives it like a whole new layer of interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was like that, and the movie I've not seen in a long time. So I was like, I don't know. I didn't know there was a lizard in this, but there is one that I think briefly appears.
Yeah. Funny enough, a lot of things about Alice in Wonderland, people don't realize that. So, like, Alice in Wonderland, there's actually two books. There's Alice's Adventures in Wonderland, which is where a lot of people know of it. And then there's Alice's Adventures Through the Looking Glass. That's where, like, the Jabberwocky comes from. And I think the poem about the walrus and the carpenter, I think, is from that as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, there it's... It, it, people usually forget that it's actually two books. but yeah, go and read it at some point. It's actually surprisingly still very fun and pleasant to read, considering how old it is.
Yeah, yeah. I was having thinking, while I finish up this DLC, I'll just probably get on Disney Plus and watch the movie, too.
It's all right.
The animated movie, not the...
Yeah, not the...
Not any
not
other
the,
versions.
Not okay. The abomination, not the Tim Burton abominations, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, that's the DLC. It's out now, $8, well worth checking out if you like seeing less sterile art than is in a lot of that game. Not that it's all that sterile, but it's just, here's a house, here's, you know,
yeah,
these different locations and all that. So that's cool. I'll definitely be finishing that up here this week. Later this week. So, and then, got Mars First Logistics from the Steam sale. This is one of the games that InnerSloth is funding with their Outer Sloth initiative. That is basically a game set on Mars where you are controlling this modular rover, and you're kind of able to design sort of how that's how it looks in a very kind of a Lego or Kinect kind of style of modular designs. And so that kind of allows you some freedom, though if you are uncreative, there's Steam Workshop with a bunch of stuff people have made that are used for or just cool looking stuff. A lot of neat stuff that they have made. I don't 100% know if it's all usable right away or if you have to have the pieces available for it to make them. But yeah, if you're playing straight, you can use some of the blueprints they give you of vehicle types that you can use, or you'll get pieces added after most of the missions you complete. I'm doing a lot of side stuff in this game, so some of those will unlock new pieces, or we'll just get you some money, which you can use to buy more of the pieces you want in the inventory screen. So if you need more of certain types, you can just buy it, that kind of stuff. But there's accessibility options where you can just say, like, make everything free, and then you can kind of just build as you want in sort of a creative mode. But right now I'm just kind of staying straight and just doing what I have available to me, which is like me making some weird designs, like trying to create like a scooper essentially for some stuff. And you're essentially using your rover to deliver items from one area to another. A little bit of a trucker thing going on, but not really. In any way realistic, because, you know, you're maybe taking a steel girder to a place where they're going to build stuff, and you're just taking one, and somehow that is the one they need to build out this whole thing. That kind of stuff. The scale is pretty interesting, as your rover is almost human sized. You kind of run into some humans in some of these settlements or buildings or whatever. And they are, you're kind of just about as big as one of those humans. But yeah, you're getting these jobs that you're delivering stuff. Usually I've just been able to push them into a big, you know, cube area that they show for you to put it. But I know that some in the future will require me to, like, put them up on a shelf or something like that to complete it, or go up to, you know, write a tram up to a second area to drop off the item, that kind of stuff. But there's like a big open world to kind of explore, not like in a really interesting way. It's Mars. It's just a bunch of hills and mountains and rocky areas and such. But you do get some fun music when you're driving around. So I've been not really doing as much fast travel as I could be, but kind of just driving my rovers around. To listen to some fun music, and but they do have, it's not Ubisoft style towers, it's just towers you drive up to, and it connects to your fast travel network. That opens up more of the map for you to see, but you can sort of drive off the map if you want. It just starts getting fuzzy, like you're losing connection. So I guess the probably design is that you're kind of watching a feed of your rover doing stuff. But yeah, it's a very cool game, and for as big as this map seems, it's only like 300 megs because they're not really using textures for much here. Mm-hmm. It's got a art style similar to like Sable, if you remember that game from a couple years ago. It's that kind of aesthetic. So it seems to help save them a lot of resources here as far as file size and all that. So, but yeah, I'm really liking this game. It's got good vibes to it. And yeah, looking forward to playing some more of that. Been mostly playing it on my Steam Deck where it runs really well and all that. So yeah, it's a fun game. And then the other game I got from the Steam sale is a game called Logiart Grimoire. Logiart Grimoire. It's a new game from Jupiter, makers of Picross, which was in early access on Steam for a while. And then once it hit 1.0, they released it on Switch as well, where I think they actually have the Picross in the name there because they can, I guess, the limit of the Picross license is that it only appears on the Switch. At least when they're making the games. So, but if you go on Steam, you can see a bunch of games named Picross, even though they technically don't have the rights to that name. But maybe that's something Nintendo will give a shit about at some point. But now this is a Picross game, but you kind of run into this wizard character, I guess, who's had this grimoire full of a bunch of basically like the items and materials and such that are sort of the building blocks of life, and has sort of lost this whole thing. So they want you to do these puzzles to refill it, this grimoire back up. It's broken up into a bunch of chapters. One of them you get is like a primordial stuff, like your water, your soil, that kind of stuff, as all like the very basic stuff to tools and, all sorts of mountains and like water stuff, and I forget what all the other chapters are, but you kind of fill that stuff out as you go. Then you run into points where you need to fuse some of the stuff you've unlocked, and it'll highlight ones you can do for that. And you basically have to give you a description of what this item is that you're trying to figure out, and you parse the words depending on what sort of has options to let you turn off the color coding or turn it on, because it'll tell you like specific words. So if you see like water, you're like, oh, I gotta put water on here, and it's like then mentions a creature, and it's like, that's a thing that tripped me up early on, but that is bacteria for creature usually, that kind of stuff. And yeah, you're kind of figuring out the fusion. So if you mess it up, it's not really a big deal. It'll either tell you that one of the ones you missed is wrong and let you pick another one, or it takes you over to this character's like error puzzles, where it's like him trying to do his own puzzles for this grimoire that are all bad pictures, essentially. He just picks a random one for you to do. But I believe at the point you maybe unlock everything, all the puzzles, it'll unlock all those puzzles as well. So if you haven't finished them all at that point, it'll open that stuff up for you. But since this was a early access game, it might also have been a Kickstarter game to have a whole section of puzzles tied to backers for that. But yeah, it's been fun just kind of doing a Picross game like this that isn't just straightforward lists of puzzles for you to do that kind of get progressively more challenging or bigger. It kind of goes back and forth depending on where you're pulling these puzzles from, but it's a pretty fun time. So that's out on Steam and Switch right now. I think it's $20. I got it on sale for about $14, so. But that's been pretty much what I've been doing. So, Brandon, how about you?
As for me, I'm actually just about finished with the Apollo Justice trilogy. I'm still on that last case, but I'm getting very close to the end of it. Nothing really much to add there. I still have not played the DLC cases from Dual Destinies and From Here yet, so I'm probably going to do those again at a later date, because I've been kind of dividing my time between Apollo Justice and, you know, the newer release of this week, which was Trails Through Daybreak. This is, of course, the newest, well, not newest, literally. There's actually a sequel that's already been released, but just hasn't been localized yet, which, by the way, we'll be talking about that a little later in the show, but yeah. It is the newest to be localized and released over here. And I'm going to go ahead and say, if you're one of those people who've been like, man, I've been hearing so much about this series, but, you know, there's just so many games to go through and all this is like, I need a more like recent starting point. Trails Through Daybreak is absolutely the best starting point right now, if that's what you're wanting to do. You know, it's starting a whole new story arc, completely different. It's tangentially related to what's come before, but not very much. And the whole, you know, like, if you are interested in the backstory, the game comes with a, you know, story so far section that you can go to find out, like, the lore and stuff of this world. But this is, like, a whole new story arc taking place in a whole new section of the game's world. And, you know, it's just, it's one of those games, like, you won't quite get it just yet, but, you know, as the game goes on, you get, like, you know, you realize, yeah, these such charming characters, and I'm loving this world building, and just the combat is fun and everything. And, yeah, if you want to start the series somewhere newer, this is where you want to start. But right now I'm in the middle of, still in the middle of, I think, Chapter 2, and we recently just finished a monster run for the CID, which is the Republic of Calvard's Central Intelligence Division. Or I think it's department, actually, in this game. A lot of fun. And, like, already, there's, like, they already take a lot of time just introducing all these really charismatic characters to you. I recently got introduced recently, the most recent, like, boss fight we had was with a cat burglar named Grimcat, who is, the game makes it very obvious who she is, even though the game is like, yeah, that is, it's, this actress named Judith Tanner, I think her name is, and, cause she was, good lord, she was the, star of this movie that recently came out called, I can't believe what it was called, but, the cast goes to, you know, the party, you know, Van and, Fairy and what's her name is, they all go to, the local movie theater because Fairy's never seen a movie before. And turns out she's the star and she's even in the theater to ask questions. And it's, they immediately is like, yep, it's her. But yeah, so far, again, loving it, a lot of fun, highly enjoyable. Definitely recommend it. And yeah, that's about all for me. So,
all right. So yeah, let's get to some news here. And first up, we got some new games coming to Game Pass for the next couple weeks here. Let's see, stuff that's available now: Journey to the Savage Planet for console and PC. I think this has been on there before, but this is kind of one of those crafting shooters. I forget exactly. I think it's one of those kind of games. It was supposed to be a big deal, but ended up just being an alright game. I assume the developer's not making any sort of sequel if they are still around, but yeah, that's a game you can check out now. Also available now, Nickelodeon All-Star Brawl 2 for console and PC. This is a Smash-style shooter, but with Nickelodeon characters.
Yeah.
Pretty much standard fare for that.
Yeah.
But yeah, let's see. Stuff that's coming up here on Tuesday for console and PC is Cricket 24.
Yep.
This is the newest one of these, so you can check that out. They got the new tournament that's going on.
Yeah, and cricket is, much like soccer, is slowly starting to gain interest here in the U.S. It's slow, but it's happening.
Especially when we beat some of the best teams.
Yeah.
Somehow, but by with all of our immigrants from the countries that are actually good.
Yeah. And the thing is about Cricket, I think if you really want to understand, there's a great YouTube video that goes, it's called Explaining Cricket Using Baseball Terms. And it basically explain it says what it is. It's like, if you want to know how cricket is, this is how you do it. Because Americans, we have a really hard time understanding the game of cricket because we grow up with baseball and we basically have to unlearn everything we know about baseball and understand cricket.
Yeah, it's kind of 360 baseball with just two bases.
Yeah. With just two bases, everybody hits.
There's no limited pitch count.
Yep. Yeah, it's just it's a fascinating game in and of itself. The only problem is that, as anybody can tell you, cricket games can go on for multiple days. So, yeah.
Yeah. It's one of those sports that England exported to other countries they colonized that eventually became way better at it than them.
Yep. It's true. The number one, cricket teams are all in India.
Yeah.
So, or in the Indian Peninsula. So it's like, it's hilarious.
Yeah. So yeah, there's that. Also July 9th for console and PC, The Case of the Golden Idol. I just beat this on Steam. Very good game. It's a, oh, they call it a point-click detective adventure game, which I guess you could call it that, but it's more of an investigation puzzle game where you're checking a bunch of evidence for names and terms and all that kind of stuff, and then coming back to a couple of boxes, sort of outlining the major evidence and the events that happened, and you're trying to place all that stuff in the correct places to figure out what happened. You got like 11 or 12 of those cases to go on. So yeah, it's a very good time if you're looking for a game to make you think. For that, so there's that on July 11th for console and PC, Neon White. That is the first person shooter, like deck building game of sorts. Where you're basically doing a lot of these speed run levels where your cards are your weapons, which you can either use as guns or sacrifice them for jumps or whatever you need to do. So,
It's an amazing game. If you have not played it yet, you absolutely should.
yeah, it's a very good game, full of style, like combining that kind of game with like a lot of Persona style to it. So there's that on July 11th.
It's also legitimately hilarious at times too.
Yeah. And let's see, also on July 11th for PC and Xbox Series X and S is Chia. That is the Breath of the Wild-esque kind of open world adventure game featuring the island of New Caledonia based on a real place, the culture and such. Obviously the location here is kind of more fantastical, but a very cool game. Mostly on the chill side, not too much in the way of combat, but there is a little bit of that in there, so that one's worth checking out. Then on July 16th for console and PC, Magical Delicacy. Let's see, this is a pixel art platformer. Cook magical delicacies from a vast collection of ingredients in your own shop. Explore an unfamiliar town. Deliver tasty treats to town. Okay, this is more life sim than a platformer, but I'm assuming it's 2D and you just jump around to do stuff. So there you go for that. It's on the 16th. And then also on July 16th is Flock on console and PC. That is a game where you're kind of flying around collecting creatures. You can play with a few friends if you want. A lot of fun art and world design there. That's really cool. So that's another one to check out. And yeah, that's some cool stuff there for July to check out. So yeah, there you go. Then Nintendo Switch Online got some new games for the NES app. Seven new games, a couple of Rare games. Because if you did not realize, Rare put out like a dozen games a year for much of the NES is like.
Yeah, back in the day.
They were just pumping out as many British as hell games as they could on the NES. They got two of those here. There's Cobra Triangle,
Yep.
Which was 1989. It's like a vehicle action game of sorts, where you're driving like a speedboat kind of thing, shooting at sharks and all sorts of other weird creatures.
Yep.
Basically a nonsense game, but one that existed, so there you go. Then there's, what was the other one that's from them? Solar Jetman, I believe, is also theirs. That is more of a like a shooter, a dual stick shooter kind of looking thing. But yeah, that's a neat one. And then for the Nintendo stuff, there's Donkey Kong Jr. Math, in case you did not know. Donkey Kong Jr. was kind of used for a lot of weird educational games back in that day, and this is one of them, math. Yeah, in 86, so right after the launch of the NES. You do a lot of that same vine swinging gameplay from Donkey Kong and Donkey Kong Jr.
But
take it to math stuff. So you're picking up numbers to fill your equations that's showing you. So that's cool. Then there's golf, which is a pretty basic golf game.
Yep.
From 1990. I believe they also put on the Game Boy. I could be wrong on that front, but that seems like one of those they would have put over there.
It was also, for a while, like an Easter egg on the Switch that they put on there, because this was one of this game was programmed by a single person, and that was Satoru Iwata.
Yeah.
And of course, Iwata passed away during the development of the Switch, and so, yeah.
Yeah. This is one of those games that was made by HAL Laboratory.
Yeah.
The Kirby people before they made Kirby, before they made Kirby.
Yeah.
So yeah, they made a couple golf games. Then we got Mach Rider. Let's see. Set either 88 years in the future from today or 127 years in the future from the game's original release date, 1985. Vehicular combat racing game. So there you go for that. That is another weird little game. Nintendo made a lot of weird stuff on there, just kind of throwing everything at the wall and seeing if anything sticks, but a lot of it didn't. So yeah, that's another HAL Laboratory game. So yeah, it's a neat little one. There's Mystery of Atlantis. This never got localized.
Yep.
Yeah, Atlantis no Nazo in Japan. It's a side-scrolling adventure game. So that's one you probably want to have a guide for.
Yeah.
Because you may not know what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Then the last one here, Urban Champion. That's, it was like a 2D fighting game kind of thing.
Yep.
I don't think I ever enjoyed when I checked it out.
Mm.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like it's a very well-received game.
Mm-hmm.
And Nintendo Power gave it a 2.5, 2.5, 1.5, and 1.5.
Yep.
For the category. So if Nintendo Power didn't think it was very good, then nobody did.
Yeah.
Because they were paid to think games were good.
Mm-hmm.
So that's as strong as they could be. So, yeah, that is that is your lineup. Mostly kind of filler stuff, but a couple of interesting games. They're kind of continuing to expand on the Rare NES stuff, which has a lot of games in there.
Yeah. You know, honestly, you know, even taking the good with the bad, you know, I'm fine with it. Because in the Nintendo library, even the bad games were interesting, if nothing else.
So in Japan, they got a Go game.
Mm-hmm.
And a Mahjong solitaire game.
Yeah. They should bring those over, you know? We like going Mahjong over here, too.
All I have to do is just look on the eShop.
Yeah.
There's dozens of those there.
Yeah. Come on, Nintendo. Get with it.
But yeah, let's go for some other news. The Capcom event happened where they said absolutely nothing will be announced outside of the three things they said, and then they... We'll tell you if they did that.
Yeah.
One of the things they did is they showed some more about Kunitsugami, Path of the Goddess, and released a demo for PlayStation, Xbox, and PC. I downloaded the demo. I've not had a chance to play it yet. But I'll check that out. The demo allows you to play some of the stages of the main game as many times as you like without a time limit. So, but I assume nothing carries over. But that's a game that's kind of a weird, like, RTS tower defense game
mm-hmm.
of sorts. Interesting idea. So that'll be neat. That's out in a couple of weeks, I think. Yeah, July 19th. So yeah, there's that. Part of the AnimeCon announcements. Spike Chunsoft announced that Natsuman 20th Century Summer Kid is coming to the West on August 8th for Switch and PC. This is a continuation of the the original series on this game, but it's like a long running series of games that mostly only released in Japan. The Shin-Chan game that came out a couple years ago was sort of the Shin-Chan take on that kind of game, where it's basically a kid going on a family summer vacation kind of thing, and has X amount of time, usually 30 days to meet new people, make friends, collect bugs, and catch fish, and do all this kind of summer vacation kind of stuff over the course of that. So this is sort of the newest addition from that original series. Yeah, from the works of Kaz Ayabe, who worked on all those games. So,
yeah.
Yeah, this is cool. It was a nice and chill. Be getting a Switch demo on July 30th. It'll be $40 when it launches. So that'll be cool to see. Let me see. From that Capcom showcase, Dead Rising Deluxe Remastered, Dirter. Got a release date of September 19th for a PS5, Xbox Series X and S, and PC. I kind of showed off that I think a lot of what they're doing here is they're redoing a lot of the character models and such, and the lighting and all that, but they're still using the original animations to keep that kind of goofy, janky animation stuff going on with all the zombies and Frank and all that. That looks like it's going to be a pretty solid upgrade for this game. They got I believe it's going to be $50 for the base game, but if you want to get a ton of costumes and skins, there's a deluxe edition for $60. So Dead Rising Deluxe Remastered Digital Deluxe Edition. It includes costumes and background music from a variety of Capcom franchises, from fighting games, Mega Man, Resident Evil Villains, Heroes, and some themed around the original games, Dead Rising games. So, yeah, if you pre-order, you get a few costume and background music sets. Frank West from the original Dead Rising. So that original look, 2006. Chuck Green and Willamette Parkview Mall P. So there you go.
Yeah.
So that should be cool. For a game that's older than you probably think it is.
Yep.
18 years old at this point.
Yeah. I remember playing it when it first came out.
Yeah, I remember not liking a lot of the Psychopass stuff because it felt a lot more horror game stuff there.
And it also seemed harder, too. Because, like, the Psychopaths, compared to, like, the regular, stuff that you have with, like, the regular zombies and shit, the Psychos were actually incredibly difficult.
Yeah. You actually were locked into an area to take them on.
Yeah.
The fighting stuff wasn't always the greatest part of that game.
No, it wasn't. Pretty much same thing for the sequel, too. Although at least with that, some of the psychos you could actually like leave the area. So
there you go. That'll be out in about 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
The next up, another announcement from AnimeCon, from NAS America and Falcom, Ease 10 Nordics has finally got a launch date for the West. For PlayStation, Switch, and PC on October
25th.
So we'll finally play the newest Ease game. It looks like it's going to be a lot more action RPG focused here. Plenty of anime stuff going on.
Oh, yeah.
Also, So yeah, that's cool. Yeah. 2 years.
I need to get back into those games. I haven't played them in a while.
Yeah, like I have eights, but in NIS America fashion, they released it on PS4, then did a PS5 version that had no real improvements because it's the sort of game that just ran perfectly fine on a PS4 and had no upgrade path for it. Just give us another $60. And you're like, fuck no. Why would I do that if you're not going to give me both? But yeah, this one looks interesting. You got two heroes, Adol and a Norman pirate, Karja. Yeah, they got a bit of a different action system here where they can... This sounds Tales-like, where they can fight independently or together. So that's interesting. They have a bullet point here. The power of mana. Harness unique abilities of mana to overcome challenges. Grapple and slide through dungeons, demolish obstacles, create new platforms, and uncover hidden treasures and critical points. It sounds like just like quick QTE stuff kind of things, but... It also looks like you can sail on a boat, so which is Adol's chief villain.
Yeah.
Whatever he is, the boats that sink and cause them to crash on a new island.
Yeah, and it's like at some point, it's like you're like, you know, Adol, maybe you should just, you know, move inland, you know? Like just it would go to a desert or something. Just get away from the bodies of water. They seem to just want you dead for some reason.
Yeah, or find a way to get drugged and get taken onto a ship unconsciously and see if that changes things.
Or maybe just, you know, always wear floaties. Like, that would be my suggestion, as the bare minimum.
Yeah. Or just go with a classic airboat.
Yeah.
Then there's no way that you can sink into the water. Unless you crash. Which never happens to him, but there you go. Next couple announcements here for early 2025. NIS America announced The Legend of Heroes Trails Through Daybreak 2. It's finally come to the West sometime in early 2025. For PlayStation, Switch, and PC. So we finally get the second part of the Daybreak arc, I guess. So yeah, that's it's got more stuff going on. So yeah, there you go for that. And then the other one is another Ys game, Ys Memoir, The Oath in Fel'Ghana. It seems like a remake of the fourth game that was on the PSP, which they already sell you as just a straight port of that game. But I'm guessing they're doing a bit more of a remake to it, a visual upgrade, but the screenshots seem to be very similar to the original, so I don't know. I'm guessing they're just selling another version of that.
Yeah, probably.
Oh, okay, this is... Okay, wait. Ys Memoir, The Oath in Fel'Ghana brings the RPG classic originally released under the title Ys 3 Wanderers from Ys, then later re-released as Ys The Oath in Fel'Ghana to the modern platforms and improved visuals while retaining the action RPG's core gameplay and charm. That was Ys 3, not 4. But remastered high definition visuals, even though it looks like it's more of a high HD PSP game and not like a full remake or anything. But all right. Whatever. That'll be out sometime next year, early next year. So. We'll see that. They got voice acting for Adol. So there you go.
Oh my god, he can talk.
At least in one of these games, not the later ones he talks. So there you go. But yeah, let's get to some more news. During the Capcom event, they confirmed that a new Resident Evil game is in development.
Oh my, who knew? What a shock.
It was a very shocking thing to announce. In an event, they said, we're not going to announce anything new. But it's going to be the director of Seven is working on this new game. So that's cool, I guess, but unsurprising. Well, yeah, that's Koshi Nakanishi is the director of Seven. So he's got a new one in him.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he figured out what new thing they can do to make it a more substantial sequel. So we'll see what that is. So there you go. Huge surprise. Everybody is blown away by this.
Mm-hmm.
But let's see. More Capcom news and negative news. They are done working on Exoprimal content.
Yep.
No longer be getting big seasonal updates filled with new content. So that is unsurprising. That lasted about a year or so.
Yeah. Seems to be the trend for a lot of these live service games now.
Yeah. It seems like this probably should have been free to play and not like a $30 or $40 game.
Yeah.
Maybe that would have done better. Because Beyond Game Pass certainly didn't save it. So yeah, that's unfortunate. I believe they're still going to keep the online and all that going, but just rotate into rotate between seasons. Yeah, starting July 11th, past seasons will just rotate in and out each month. So there you go for content you might have missed or whatever. But
yeah,
there you go. But let's get to some sad news here. Sergeant Studios has announced they are laying off people. Just over a dozen employees. Following the release of its first game, Tales of Kenzera Zao, back in April. They don't explain why. Saying that they're focusing on supporting those affected and continuing to work on further updates for Tales of Kenzera Zao. I assume this may not be so much related to sales or anything, but more being between projects.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, it's, they finished the game. They largely don't have that much else to do with it at this point. So it seems like bug fixes and maybe doing some pre-production on whatever the next thing might be. If they can get, you know, a publisher or somebody to help them with that, that would be great. But yeah, as studio head and founder Abu Bakar Salim said, thank you so much to those who have checked in. This hurts deeply. This isn't the news I wanted to share today. I'm so proud of what the team has achieved over the course of these 4 years. Things got tough. Every one of them stood so strong. It was inspiring. So to be delivering this news today really sucks. I know we're not alone here, but that doesn't make it easier. Focus now is to continue supporting those affected in any way we can. I will be replying to this with links to posts from our affected team members. If you have any opportunities available or know of any going, please consider these incredible talent people. Yeah. That's unfortunate, but this one doesn't seem like less of doom and gloom unless that game were to have sold like incredibly well. They may not laid off people, but I suspect this is a lot of just being between projects and seeing and not needing, you know, a couple dozen people to not work on anything. If you're trying to keep the whole studio solvent for now. But yeah. So there you go. But yeah, let's get to some Nintendo news here to wrap up the show. Nintendo's president, Furukawa, has a highly ambitious plan for avoiding resellers and scalping and all that for the next Switch, whatever they're going to call their next platform. He said that the answer is to just make enough units to meet customer demand, which nobody's ever thought of before. So yeah, that's their grand plan to avoid those issues, as you know, COVID's no longer a huge global issue. The chip shortages seem to be less of an issue at this point. Supply chain seems to be mostly back to normal. So the release of the Switch, assumed to be next year, likely has as much going for it to meet demand as possible. But I'm going to say there's no way they're going to meet demand. But either way, they'll probably do better than they have been in the past. Where like the Switch and the Wii had huge problems staying in stock for quite a while.
Yeah. My response is, I'll believe it when I see it.
Yeah. Unless they put out like a Wii U type situation where nobody was all that interested. So
yeah,
you could fully go into stores day one and get one if you wanted one.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's one of the systems I got. I think came out in November and I got it in December. So I was like, I don't have to get it right now. And I had finally got some extra money in December. And I was like, sure, I'll buy that. Especially because they were doing their bonus stuff for the deluxe edition.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's the whole thing. But yeah, Nintendo's plan, pretty easy idea for Furukawa to have this idea. So we'll just make more than we've ever done before. Mm. And just have more supply.
Yeah.
That'll be the scalpers. It's like, yep.
Yeah. Like sure. I said, I will believe it when I see it.
Yeah.
Like I don't believe that they're not capable, but we've seen this happen before. So, you know, yeah. So you balls in your court, Nintendo. Prove to me that you can do this.
Yeah. So, yeah, there you go for that story. But the last one here, Nintendo has sued a pair of pirate groups.
Mm-hmm.
One of them particularly dumber than the other one. But this first one targets the owners of modded hardware,
which
sold MIG devices or flash carts, as well as modded switches, including some with pirated games pre-installed for as much as $670. But yeah, according to Nintendo, the company reached out to the owner in March to have them shut down.
Mm-hmm.
The Japanese company and the site owner agreed to this, but never shut it down.
Mm.
So now they're suing for a preliminary injunction, statutory damages, and to have all of the devices, online accounts, and paperwork associated with modded hardware turned over to it.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of getting a second chance to just shut down and move on.
Mm-hmm.
They said, eh, we'll think about it. Or they said, yeah, we'll do that, but never did it. So the second one involves a weirder target. That's targeting the moderator for the Switch Piracy subreddit.
Mm-hmm.
It goes by Archbox. In addition to being the most active member of the 190,000 person group, Nintendo also alleges that Archbox has used his position to encourage people to pirate games, in part by directing them to online pages where he sells his services for circumventing hardware protections, including in private groups on Telegram. Mm. As the complaint says here, defendant is the operator, overseer, and driving force behind several pirate shops, through which defendant has offered massive libraries of pirated Nintendo Switch games. Defendant has also offered ongoing encouragement and assistance to actual and potential users of those pirate shops, including by promoting the pirate shops and their game offerings and by offering and providing assistance with circumvention software that is necessary to access the pirate shops and play games downloaded from those pirate shops.
Hmm.
Nintendo's lawyers even quote from an old comment Archbox left on Reddit where he proclaims, most of us who hacked our Switches are, like you said, pirates and aren't going to give Nintendo $50 for a game.
Hmm.
Also claimed that the company contacted him with cease and desist notices back in March, but that he continued promoting piracy anyway while also trying to delete his online history, including Discord servers and GitHub accounts. So basically refused to cease and desist while trying to erase his history of posts and all that in a way that's makes it very suspicious and tells Nintendo they should probably sue this guy. So there you go. One dum-dum that decided to keep doing it on his own after Nintendo found the pretty obviously named piracy group on subreddit. It's like, you probably should have found a different name, tried to hide it somewhat, but there you go. And they're going after some more pirate groups. So, so they await having a new platform to keep free of pirates. They're trying to stop people from doing that on the current Switch. So there you go.
All right.
But yeah, that'll end up doing it for the show this week. As I said, not really a ton of news this week. Yeah, I'm sure we'll have Dan Rib back next week to talk about some of the games he's seen and all that. Which I believe at Anime Con, Bandai Namco had an event that they said would have a bunch of reveals and only announced a Bleach game. I think the other stuff was like, here's this character in this game, and Bandai Namco fans were very much annoyed by this. Because they were expecting a bunch of games to get announced, maybe a new Digimon game. And if you know a group that's more desperate for content, it's Digimon fans. So, yeah. But yeah, that'll do it for the show this week. Thank you, Brandon, for joining.
Always.
We'll be back next week with a new slate of news and games to talk about. As you know, as we await the summer to continue on. So, yeah, thank you all for checking in. If you enjoy the show, if you let friends and family know, they should check out the show and select strangers who are also awaiting some more cool games coming out this year in the summer. But yeah, thank you all for tuning in. Hope you have a good week ahead. We'll see you all next time. Have a good one.